Again, I want to thank my brother priest for this opportunity to preach at all of the masses this weekend as we continue this Fortnight for Freedom, a two-week period of prayer, reflection, and study of various aspects of religious freedom, a freedom which we know is severely under attack in these days. Last weekend, as you recall, I focused on some of the concepts regarding the foundational premises for religious freedom. Today, I'd like to turn our attention to a concept that is often misused and misunderstood in our own time. That is the separation of church and state. The erroneous concept of the separation of church and state, that is, what it does not mean, has become so ingrained in the national discussion that even many Catholics are struck uncomfortable with priests preaching about anything that has political implications, such as voting or the topic of this homily. They complain, "Father, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's and to God what is God's." To which I reply, "You quote scripture correctly. However, when Caesar thinks he is God, those who speak for God must check Caesar and recover a proper understanding of the founders' intent when they crafted the idea of the separation of church and state." So here's the contemporary landscape. Here we are today. This is what we're looking at. Many, if not most, Americans erroneously think that the separation of church and state means that there can be no mention of God or reference to anything religious in any public setting. Therefore, we have to remove God from the public discussion for fear that even mentioning God, the government might be attempting to establish a state-sponsored religion. Therefore, religious discussion is fine so long as it's restricted to a private experience, or else severely restricted to one's church or religious group. But in fact, the proponents of this mindset are themselves hypocritically pushing their own brand of religion. It's called secularism. And in this format, it forbids the mention of God in any public setting and severely seeks to restrict religion to a private affair of conscience. Hence, religious values have no place in the public arena. So what have we seen? We have the elimination of the Bible from classrooms, the elimination of prayer at public gatherings or at the beginning of a school day, the attempt to remove the phrase "under God" from the Pledge of Allegiance, or the phrase "in God we trust" from our currency. And just recently, several courts upheld a ruling stating that prayer gatherings on government property are now unconstitutional. Hence, the annual observance of the National Day of Prayer in May, a 61-year-old tradition, has been declared illegal. Consider this. Among the most recent monuments added in the nation's capital, in Washington, is the memorial to Reverend Martin Luther King Jr., who was an ordained Baptist minister. Anyone who studied the speeches of Dr. King knows well that there are constant references to God in his orations. That should be of no surprise. And yet, would you believe that of the 14 quotes inscribed in stone in the new memorial to Dr. King, there is not a single reference to God? Not one. How hard did researchers have to work to come up with 14 meaningful quotes by Dr. King that did not mention God? And across the tidal basin from the King Memorial is the Jefferson Memorial. That monument contains numerous quotes that make explicit reference to God and how important religion is and was to the national fabric that is America. How far have we strayed? But is this what the founders envisioned? A public arena in America devoid of God? Hardly. The founders themselves were very deeply religious men. They never meant to expunge religion from the public life. The founders were champions of public expressions of church activity, and they knew that in order for a democracy to survive, citizens had to be virtuous. Thus, the founders understood that churches were necessary for the republic to flourish because churches helped to form a virtuous populace. It was in churches that virtue training was best organized and taught. In fact, in the 1780s, during the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia, the founders made it a point to attend each other's religious services on Sunday as a way of endorsing government's backing of religious activity and its promotion. Let us be clear. It is without question that in the minds of the founders, the separation of church and state was intended to protect churches from government intrusion and to prevent the government from coercing churches into behavior churches deemed immoral. So we may ask, how on earth do we get into this mess? Starting in 1947, the Supreme Court embarked on a new theory, a complete departure from the founders' intent, that the separation of church and state must look like what in fact we see today. They took a letter by Thomas Jefferson, dated from 1802, and perverted it to mean the exact opposite of what Jefferson intended. In fact, Jefferson attended a prayer service at the House of Representatives just 2 days after he wrote this letter, where he referred to a wall of separation between church and state, which had nothing to do with the elimination of religion from public discourse, but had everything to do with the limits that federal government could have over religion. So now, in this very moment, we are faced with a very simple question for us as Catholics. Can the government force Catholics to pay for contraceptive coverage and insurance plans even if that coverage violates our religious beliefs? Now, in this country, we should be reminded that we have a very long tradition of exempting religious groups from participating in activities that violated a said religious group's beliefs. For example, during the Revolutionary War, Quakers were not forced to take up arms against the British because Quakers are pacifists. In yesteryear, Jehovah's Witnesses have never been required to recite the full Pledge of Allegiance because parts of the pledge violate their sense of allegiance to God. The Amish have never been forced to send their children to public school or to any school. And until recently, doctors and nurses could never be forced to perform abortions. But all of that is changing now. So in practical terms, keep in mind that by the end of this calendar year, if we continue on our current path, many Catholic charitable works across the United States will be unable to operate as financially viable practices. The Obama administration's definition of what constitutes a religious group and what it can do is so restrictive that it will effectively prevent Catholic agencies from helping non-Catholics. And if we do help non-Catholics, which is, of course, in our tradition, we don't discriminate between Catholics and non-Catholics when we hand out a bowl of soup or we give out free health care. If we do help non-Catholics, there will be heavy fines levied upon us, and we will have to close many of our charitable works. To this point, Francis Cardinal George, the Archbishop of Chicago, cynically asked readers of his column in the Archdiocesan newspaper to buy copies of the most recent Archdiocesan directory, where one can find 3 pages filled with names of Catholic agencies that assist the underprivileged. He said that by this time next year, those pages will be blank because the new landscape of government overreach into religious affairs, never envisioned by the founders, would cripple these agencies and ruin their financial solubility. And who will be hurt the most? Women? children, and the poor. It is so evident now how this misinterpretation of the separation of church and state has wreaked havoc in our nation. The government has now gone so far as to tell what churches can and cannot do, and even define what constitutes a church activity. We are not even talking about the separation of church and state. We are now experiencing government overreach into the very definition of what constitutes a church and what a church can lawfully do. Make no mistake, there is an overt persecution of the Catholic Church in the United States. I hold in my hand here the May 8th issue of a publication, magazine, daily journal called The Express. It's a publication produced, as it says here on the cover, by the Washington Post. And on the back cover, there's an ad written and run by the Freedom From Religion Foundation. And it says here, it's time to quit the Catholic Church. Open letter to liberal and nominal Catholics. Please exit en masse. And the word mass is spelled mass. Now, the Washington Post, of course, is free to run whatever kinds of ads it chooses. That's certainly true. But I do have to ask, out of curiosity, would this ad have been run if it was inviting Jews to leave Judaism or Muslims to leave Islam? Somehow I doubt it. The misinterpretation of the concept of the separation of church and state is now being used to facilitate an active agenda to eliminate the church from public discourse. And you, my good people, are caught in the crosshairs. Now, in spite of the gloomy picture I just painted, all is not lost, believe it or not. As persons of hope, we still have a real chance to stem and perhaps even reverse the tide of the onslaught of government intrusion to the lives of persons of religious faith, such as yourselves. The separation of church and state was never meant to eliminate religious rhetoric, prayer, or value formation from the public sphere. In fact, our founders, we can safely say, envisioned the exact opposite. So by being a faithful and strong Catholic, you are serving the nation as a good American, because you are holding true to the very values that our founders knew were essential to the survival and prospering of our republic. This is no time to hide or to cower under the pressures exacted upon us. The battle lines have clearly been drawn, and what was once a subtle but steady persecution of persons of religious faith under the guise of the separation of church and state has become an all-out attack intending to eliminate the church from relevance altogether. I am confident that we will do our part to make sure that that does not happen. And so I strongly exhort you to exercise your freedom this November in the voting booth and to restore America to a nation our founders might still recognize. Patriotism demands nothing less of us. We must speak up in defense of the rights of the church in order to strengthen the state and allow America to rediscover once again all that has made it great. May God bless you. May God bless you. And may God bless the United States of America.